We are looking at Mark chapter 14, and I believe we're going to be finishing up Mark chapter 14 today. So let's look at that, and we're going to be starting in verse 66. Mark chapter 14 and verse 66. All right, let me make sure I got everything lined up here. All right. Looking at this, we see this is Peter's denial of Christ. And of course, these are common things that many of us know about already. But there are just some things that I like to point out as we go through this class period. Let's read. Now, as Peter was below in the courtyard, one of the servant girls of the high priest came. And when she saw Peter warming himself, she looked at him and said, "You also were with Jesus of Nazareth." But he denied it, saying, "I neither know nor understand what you are saying." And he went out on the porch, and a rooster crowed. And the servant girl saw him again and began to say to those who stood by, "This is one of them." But he denied it again. And a little later, those who stood by and a little later, those who stood by said to Peter again, "Surely you are one of them, for you are a Galilean, and your speech shows you." And he began to curse and swear, "I do not know this man of whom you speak." A second time, the rooster crowed. Then Peter called to mind the word that Jesus had said to him, "Before the rooster crows twice, you will deny me three times." You will deny me three times. So we're going to consider these in order of the denial. So considering the first denial that he gives here, now keeping in mind, of course, the context of all that's going on here. At this point, Jesus has just finished his trial. He is, well, I say finished. Actually, this is taking place at the same time as the trial. And so as we're reading this, it appears as though the trial has just ended and he's been mocked, he's being mocked, but what Mark does is he looks at the trial and the denials separately, as if they were taking place at different times, but they are not. According to John's account, they actually are taking place concurrently. So this is during the trial that Jesus that Jesus is being silent. Jesus is not really answering anything, and then he makes this declaration to the question that we see in verse 61: "Are you the Christ, the Son of the Blessed?" And Jesus said, "I am." And you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of the power and coming with a cloud of heaven. And so we see this contrast, this dichotomy between that Jesus's outright declaration of who he is, and the fact that he was willing to confess himself before the others under such extreme circumstances. And yet Peter is outside, being questioned by a servant girl, and what does he do? He denies Christ three times. He denies him. So considering this first denial here, recall that that John, we looked at this last time from verse 54, and also from the Gospel of John. John's account says that John somehow knew the high priest and his staff, had some connection there, and allowed Peter in to the into the courtyard, into this estate here that the high priest was living in. And as a result, he let the servant girl who kept the door know to let Peter in. And so we see that in John chapter 18, verses 15 through 17. You see, he knows the high priest, knows his staff, tells the servant girl who guards the door, who watches the door, "Hey, let him in." She didn't seem to question it at first. As we note here in this particular passage, she doesn't question him at the door. We find that he he is questioned, or she questions him as he is by the fire. And so let's see. Yeah, Peter is warming himself by the fire in the courtyard, and she approaches him and looks intently at him as if he were and asks rather as if who and asks if he were with Jesus. We see some of that in Luke 22:56, that she is asking him intently. And so we see that courtyard here in this, if you recall, this was sort of a picture, an image of the high priest's residence at this time. Come on now. The high priest's residence at this time. And you can see the courtyards around here, and the house, the proper where Jesus is being questioned up in that upper room there, in that upper area. And she doesn't question this at first, but she looks at him intently and says, "Hey, aren't you with, or weren't you with Jesus?" And I'm wondering some of what's going on here. She must have felt responsible for him, saying, "Wait a second, isn't this who this is?" And she might have felt responsible for this situation because she's the one who let him in, right? And perhaps she wanted to make sure that he wasn't going to try anything and get blamed for it later, because as you might imagine, if he were some kind of if he were with Jesus, he might try to mount some kind of a rescue or something that might be going through the mind of this servant girl. Regardless of her intent on why she asked this question, he denies it. He denies knowing Jesus, even going so far as to say that he doesn't even understand her. And we find that this denial that we see here is in the Greek tense. It's the aorist tense in Greek. Now, as English speakers, we have no idea what the aorist tense is unless you've studied it. But it's basically a past tense, and it's a different kind of past tense. But we can understand it as a past tense that shows something that is completed in the past, and it's sort of a one-time thing that we see here. So he denies Christ, and he does it sort of, it's a indefinite, but it's a one-time kind of deal. He says, "Okay, no, I don't know the man. I don't even know what you're saying." And that's important for later. A tell for when someone is lying. So if you want to ever find out, if you want to ever figure out if somebody is lying, especially if they're bad at lying, there is a and hopefully we are bad at lying. There is a sort of a fight or flight response. Whenever we're under this situation where we feel like, "Oh man, I don't know what I need to do. I need to either run or fight." There's that fight or flight response that we often get. And here we find that he chooses to flee. He is not in any kind of situation where he could possibly fight and win, especially since he tried that in the garden a few hours ago, or a little while ago. So he is in the gar or he is in the courtyard, and he says it's time to go. It's he but he doesn't go far. He doesn't go far. He just leaves the situation. He goes out to the porch by the street. Here it says that in verse 66, and he went out on the porch and the rooster crowed. The rooster crowed. This is for the first time that the rooster crows. Recall that if you recall us talking about when the rooster crows, when we looked all the way back when Jesus predicted that in verse 30, chapter 14 and verse 30, we looked at the times when the rooster crows during the night. The first time that the rooster crows, the first time he crows is, it's not entirely clear. There are different scholars that have different opinions, but my thought is it's at some random time of the night, sometime after midnight. It's before dawn, way before dawn, sometime in the middle of the night, after midnight, and that's basically all we can get from the timestamp of this first rooster crow here. In any event, the crowing didn't faze Peter at all, as he didn't seem to register it at the time. It wasn't something that he really understood, or at least he didn't faze him at all. It didn't it didn't make him realize, oh, hey, I need to stop this. I need to stop this and do the right thing. I need to stop denying him. So he doesn't do that at this time. Now, after this first denial, we find that he denies Christ a second time. He denies Christ a second time. And that second denial, we find that Peter must have come back in by the fire. He was out on the porch for a little while, then he decides he's either too cold or he can't stand it for whatever reason, and he decides to go back in because we see in John 18:25 that the second time he's questioned, he is by the fire. So he must have gone out for a little bit, then come back in by the fire to warm himself for this by the, when he's when he at the time that he denies Christ a second time. That same servant girl, she just couldn't let it go. And that's understandable. She couldn't let it go. She was confident that this was a disciple of Jesus and wanted to make sure, very likely, wanted to make sure that he wasn't going to start anything. But instead of confronting him directly, she tells others about it, and they confront him about it, including another servant girl that we see in Matthew 26:71. It says another servant girl is involved in the questioning, and perhaps a man is involved as well, as we see in Luke 22:58. It says a man in the New King James, but it's the word anthropos, which is a generic for human being. So we see that it's that somebody else questions and other people question Peter at this time. It's not just one person, it's several people who come up to him and approach him at this time. The first denial we found just happens once. It occurs just once. It's one and done. But this denial is in the imperfect tense. It's sort of a continual past tense. He continued to deny him. He kept on denying him. It was something that he continued to do. It wasn't just a one-time thing, or at least it wasn't a one and done thing. It's like, no, guys, I really don't know. This is I don't know this man. And so he continued to deny him. And so that counts as the second time that he was denying Christ. So this was several people confronting him after this servant girl had outed him to the others, and he continued to deny it. And so for this third denial, this third denial that we see here, Luke informs us that an hour passes between the second and the third denials. So that second denial, of course, we see is something that continually happens for a little while, but after it stops, an hour passes by, and we see that in Luke 22:59, and something else happens. John says in John 18:26 that the servant of the high priest and a relative of the one that Peter had struck, if you recall, in the Garden of Gethsemane, Peter was ready to take his sword and fight for Jesus and perhaps get killed. And he cuts off the ear. I think he missed. I think Peter probably missed and meant to really do some harm to this servant of the high priest. And just got his ear. But Jesus heals this ear. And in any event, this relative of this man, this another servant of the high priest, recognizes him. He was in the garden at the time, this man. He says, wait a second, you were there. You were there. This was, you were with him. Surely you are one of them. And then he adds on in Mark 14:70, for you are a Galilean and your speech shows it. They were confident that this man, that this person was with Jesus, not just because the servant of the high priest saw him, but also because he spoke like a Galilean. Apparently, he spoke with some kind of an accent or a dialect that betrayed his Galilean background. And what reason would a Galilean have here right now, at this particular time in Jerusalem, in the house of the high priest? Now, in Jerusalem, now this is the time of the Passover, so Galileans are going to be there. But why is he in the house of the servant of the high priest? Why is he in that area in the courtyard at the time that Jesus is there? Why is this Galilean here? Except because he was a follower of Jesus. So they've come to this conclusion that his speech betrays him, essentially. It's kind of like, you know that somebody is from up north when they come down here in different dialects, not just from the north, but from different areas, different parts of the world. If they speak with a particular accent, you recognize, hey, wait a second, that guy's not from here originally. So what's going on? I'm sure you can say the same about me. But this time, Peter's denial, he was all the more vehement about his denial. His heels are dug in. He says, I don't know the man. I don't know what you're talking about. I don't even understand you. And now it says that he began to curse and swear. He began to curse and swear. When we think sometimes, when we think of swearing and cursing, we often think of someone just using profanity and just saying some vulgarities, perhaps. But that's not the case here. That's not usually what it means when you look at it in the Bible. The ESV says that he began to invoke a curse on himself and swear. So that's how the ESV translates that. And it is a possibility. Peter could have been saying something like, "May God strike me down if I'm lying." And so that is a possibility when it comes to when he's cursing and swearing in this manner. It's possible that that's what he's saying. May God strike me down if I am lying. But this is only a possibility. Another way Peter could have cursed and swore was to curse and swear against Jesus to show that he wasn't one of his disciples. That would certainly prove it, wouldn't it, in the minds of some, to say, oh man, that guy, a curse on him, or something of that nature. Well, Jesus is placed under oath and speaks the truth. We see in 14, verse 62, 61 and 62. It says he's placed under oath in Matthew's account at this point. And he says that statement in verse 62 under oath. He says, he's asked if he is the Christ, and he says, I am. And you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of the power and coming with the clouds of heaven. While Jesus is placed under oath and speaking the truth, Peter utters an oath on his own to speak a lie. While Jesus shows his resolve under intense questioning, under threats and beatings, Peter buckles under what amounts to light questioning. Somehow, Jesus and Peter, we see in Luke 22:61, somehow Jesus and Peter lock eyes as the rooster crows a second time. Have you ever caught the tail end of a conversation and it just sounded really bad? It probably wasn't what you thought, but you couldn't be sure. Well, this is exactly what Jesus thought as he hears Peter swearing his denial of him. Even so, he knew what was happening. He predicted that this was going to happen. He knew that he would deny him. He hears that rooster crow and he knows that it is the third time that he's done this. this thing, denied Christ before men. And my question at this time for you, for Sam, for whoever else wants to contribute, what do you think? What do you think that Jesus' expression was here? I mean, I wonder, thinking about this, seeing the in my mind's eye, if they lock eyes, and Peter is no doubt looking pale, perhaps looking as if he had just been found out, just been caught. You know, I can only imagine that it's like, oh, what did I just do? What would you imagine Jesus' expression was at this point? Could it be one of perhaps pain or hurt? Or perhaps it's like pain or hurt, like he's hurt. I mean, he's already been, because he's leaving the situation where he is being mocked and he is being beaten. We see in verses 64 and 65. He is leaving that situation where he is being blind, where he was blindfolded, and the people struck him, slapped him, did all sorts of things of that nature, and so he may be bruised a bit, maybe bleeding, and he comes out and he sees Peter denying Christ and even cursing Jesus, or cursing, bringing a curse upon himself, and he's saying. And he might be looking at him and saying, is this an expression of pain or hurt? Or perhaps this is an expression of love and understanding. And saying, or perhaps, is it one of disappointment? I'm so disappointed in you. Now, granted, he already knew this was going to happen. He predicted it. So, thoughts. Before I kick it over to Sam, Dan has a comment here and says, compassionate. So Dan thinks that Jesus' expression was one of compassion. He knew that Peter was giving in to the fear of being put to death after witnessing the armed mob taking Jesus away. And that's certainly a possibility. I don't know what his expression would be. But you know, compassion is certainly a good one. And I have, you know, love and understanding is that possibility, saying, yeah, I knew you were going to do this, and here's what's happening. Sam, do you have any additional thoughts on that? What do you think the expression might be? And the reason why I'm asking this is because it puts us into Peter's shoes. We see what Peter sees. We say we've denied Christ three times, and he predicted it, and we know that, and we see this expression on Jesus's face, and what do we take from that? Sam, thoughts?
Well, it's a heartbreaking scene, for sure. And of course, it says Peter goes out and weeps bitterly, right? So you know what the aftermath is, but just looking at it, we sometimes take these scenes that are told us here and we put them in isolation. Like all of a sudden it's silent, nobody's moving, and there they are staring at each other for a long time. This is probably a very brief situation. It was in the midst of a lot of other movement and noise. It wouldn't be much different, I would think, than a situation of maybe locking eyes on someone in a crowd as you pass by them. You know, it's very brief. But you know, Jesus' expression, of course, who knows, it's speculation, but the thoughts that I was having was one more of impassive. You know, when he he's sitting up there being silent in front of you could ask the same question, you know, what's his expression when they're accusing him of everything and he's standing there being silent? You know, I don't see him being angry or, it's more like, yep, you know, I'm just going to stand here. You know, you're lying, and I'm, you know, I'm, you're just convicting yourself. I don't have to do anything. And with Peter, you know, it's Jesus is knowing exactly. I don't think there'd be any kind of, anything in the negative sense, because Jesus knew it was going to happen ahead of time. And when you think about it with us, yeah, I was thinking about the relationship with us. So does God know we sin? Yep, he sure does. Does he know we're going to be sinning in the future? Yeah, he does. Does he know it even before we literally commit the act? Yes, he does. So, you know, what's his expression toward us? You know, and it's a similar thing, but just the heartbreak of the whole thing. It's like every time you imagine this, the grief and the heartbreak of what's going on and what's going on through Peter's mind, is really heavy.
Yeah, definitely. And as you say, you know, and that's another possibility, and perhaps a good thing. Perhaps it was just a momentary glimpse, and it wasn't anything that could have the possibility of conveying that kind of expression. That's a possibility as well. Whatever the look is, Peter sees it. And whether it be quick, whether it be just long enough to convey a certain expression that Jesus might have had, Peter sees it, and all his emotions are no doubt conveyed to his most faithful disciple, the one who saw him raise the dead, be transfigured before him, and pray an earnest and heartfelt prayer of sorrow and grief and anticipation of what was about to happen. So, I mean, think of all the things that Peter had witnessed. He was the inner circle of the inner circle, right? Peter, James, and John. Peter had seen all of these things. He was one of five other people who saw the raising of Jairus' daughter. He was one of three people who saw him transfigured. He was one of three people who heard his prayer in the Garden of Gethsemane. And yet, even so, even through all that, he denied him. Peter did all that and still couldn't find the courage to confess that he knows Jesus, that he believes he is the Christ, the Messiah, the Son of the living God. I mean, how many times did he confess that in the scriptures? We find mainly once in Mark chapter 8 that he says that, but it's actually a couple of times in Matthew, several times in John. We see, you know, you have the words of eternal life. We see in John 6, you are the Christ. We see in Mark 8, you are the Son of the living God. We see Matthew 18, we see these things happening throughout the gospel accounts where he's seen so many things. He knows that this is the Messiah. He knows this is the Christ, and yet he still can't find the courage to confess him before men. And instead, he denies him. He knows who this is. He knows that he's the Messiah, that he is the Son of God. And yet, here we are. Here we are. He even said in the garden, recall, when his denial was predicted, that he would die for him. And in that moment, in this moment, when he had that opportunity, he fails to live up to his bluster. We, of course, find that Jesus' prophecy came true, and he was ashamed. He heard the rooster. He saw his Lord beaten and perhaps bloodied. So he went out and wept bitterly. That rooster signaled that dawn was fast approaching, as we'll see in the next verse. We see in the next few chapters here, or next few verses, we'll see that that Jesus is then taken to see Pilate, Pontius Pilate. We'll talk about him a little bit before we move on. Sam, do you have any last thoughts about this denial here?
Well, when you were talking about that, I was just thinking about, you know, our own situations, and, you know, if you've been a Christian more than a few months, I would imagine, and maybe even sooner than that, definitely after you've been years, you just look back and say, when did you have an opportunity to stand up for Christ and you didn't? You know, it's easy for us. We've said this before about Peter. You know, it's, people go, oh yeah, Peter, you know, this is Peter. But, you know, how much more are we in these shoes? you know, there have been opportunities, I know, in my life where I've had an opportunity to make some statement, to stand up for God, to stand up for Jesus. And sometimes I have, and sometimes I didn't. And, you know, I can, I'm not going to let Peter off the hook because it's obviously a denial of Christ, but I can sure understand the situation.
Yeah, there but for the grace of God, right? Go we. We are not much better than Peter is on many occasions here. And that's a great point. You know, we're human and we fail and we falter. In fact, the sermon this morning is about confessing Christ. And so we'll talk about that a little bit later. So, but for now, yeah, this is something that perhaps we've all faced, at some point or another. Now I hope none of us have outright denied him, but perhaps we've failed to speak up on a particular occasion. That's a difficult thing sometimes for all of us. And even Peter, who had such great faith. Now, his faith wasn't perfect, of course. We see that he was mistaken on several things. But even so, he was mistaken at least up until Acts chapter 2 when the Holy Spirit comes down. But before then, I mean, he still thought that Jesus would usher in a physical kingdom. We see that in Acts chapter 1, but that's not what happens. And so, even so, but he thinks that he's going to usher in a physical kingdom. So why doesn't he speak up to him now, speak up for him now, to hopefully, maybe get that ball rolling? I don't know. But he's fearful. He's in that moment. He is fearful for what's going to happen. And so that's a position that we've all been in at some point or another, where we had that opportunity and perhaps we failed. Perhaps we did not. But we've all been there at some point or another. All right. So, the next section here is verses or chapter 15. We are in chapter 15. That's the second to last chapter, everybody. It's been a long time, huh? Chapter 15, here's the word cloud for chapter 15. We see a major person in chapter 15 is Pilate. And I don't think his first name is mentioned here in Mark's account, but this is Pontius Pilate. He is the governor. The technical term in Roman governance is the prefect of Judea at this time. Of course, Pilate plays a big role in this chapter, and of course Jesus does most certainly. And there's of course the word crucified is a big word there. King, of course, he's called King of the Jews on many occasions. So we see king there. We see Jews at about the same size, meaning it's about the same, used about the same time. The hour, it was about the such and such hour, a particular thing. The priests cried, the people cried, crucify him. You know, the people answered. You know, there's a lot of big words here. Barabbas is, of course, a big thing mentioned here. So there's so much going on in this chapter. This is it. This is the moment that we've been building up toward. This ends up being Friday. So we were in Thursday. Now we've been thinking about it in terms of I've been putting it up there as Friday begins at the time that there's dawn. But they of course thought that Friday began the night before. But in any event, this would be Friday at dawn as things happen. And so we see that he is before Pilate. And after the rooster crowed, of course, after the rooster crows, dawn was fast approaching. and the Jewish leaders were finally making their decision on what to do with Jesus. So let's read this passage here, at least the first couple of verses, as we go through this, because I'm not sure how far we're going to be able to get. Let's look at verses 1 through 5. Immediately in the morning, the chief priests held a consultation with the elders and scribes and the whole council, and they bound Jesus, led him away, and delivered him to Pilate. Then Pilate asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" He answered and said to him, "It is as you say." And the chief priests accused him of many things, but he answered nothing. Then Pilate asked him again, saying, "Do you answer nothing? See how many things they testify against you." But Jesus still answered nothing, so that Pilate marveled. Pilate marveled. All right, so he goes to Pilate. And, you know, the people, the Jews at this time, the Jewish leaders, had already sentenced him to death. We saw that at the last few verses of the trial here. Verse 64, "What do you think?" And they all condemned him to be deserving of death. They already sentenced him to death, but they knew that it wouldn't be an easy sentence to carry out, given their Roman overlords, the people who were over them, and the love that Jesus had of the people. These leaders clearly wanted a gruesome and agonizing and very public death that the cross would afford them. Not to mention, such people were shown to be cursed. We see in Deuteronomy chapter 21, verse 22 and 23, that the idea that that they are cursed, anyone who hangs on a tree. And of course, that's a concept that we see and we talked about in the class that Sam did on Galatians, where Jesus says he became that. Well, Paul writes that Jesus became that curse for us. And we see Deuteronomy chapter 21, verses 22 and 23. Let's see if I can turn there real quick. "If a man has committed a sin deserving of death, and he is put to death, and you hang him on a tree, his body shall not remain overnight on the tree, but you shall surely bury him that day, so that you do not defile the land which the Lord your God is giving you as an inheritance. For he who is hanged is accursed of God." And so that's not to say that the hanging itself means that you are accursed, or it ultimately means that you're accursed. What it means is that if that person has done something deserving of death, then he is already accursed, and hanging him on the tree is evidence of that fact. It's saying that we recognize that this person is accursed and he's hanging on a tree, but don't let him stay overnight. Of course, we do see that with at least Jesus on the cross here, and no doubt the other the thieves that are later that are also crucified with him are no doubt brought down as well, especially since this was right before the Sabbath. And so they wanted this. They wanted to show that he was accursed. This means of death signaled to everyone that this person had committed this very wicked deed, whatever this wicked deed is. And of course, they recognize that wicked deed as blasphemy. We see that they thought he was committing blasphemy in verse 64. "What further, you have heard the blasphemy. What do you think? What further need do we have of witnesses?" And so that was quite a severe accusation in Jewish law, a severe crime, if you will. At this time, only the Romans, however, could execute someone in such a manner. Only the Romans could execute someone in such a public and gruesome display. We see in John 18:31, we see that John recounts that is the case. So these Jewish leaders were in the process of carrying out this plot to get the Romans to crucify Jesus. This plot that began as early as Mark chapter 3 and verse 6. All the way back there, this plot had been hatched. And so they were working on this plot, and then finally it comes to fruition. And but they needed to get the Romans to agree. And so, so the Jewish leaders, again, they were in process of carrying this out, and to get the Romans to crucify Jesus, they just needed Pilate's support and that of the people at the same time to convince Pilate of this particular thing. This, we see, was very much likely done at around 5 or 6 a.m. Based on the fact that this was in the morning, the rooster had just crowed, and he is being taken to Pilate very early on Friday morning. It was as Jesus said. He was delivered to the chief priests by Judas, who in turn delivered him to the Gentiles, that is, to Pilate, to the Romans, who then would deliver him up to be mocked, to be scourged, and to be crucified. We see the mocking and the scourging occurring in verses 15 through 20, and then, of course, the crucifixion a little later on. So all these things were happening, and he predicted it all the way back in Mark chapter 9, verse 31, and chapter 10, verses 33 and 34. There was a prediction of his death earlier in chapter 8, but it didn't go into as many details, or at least Mark doesn't record them. So all these things happen for that. It is unclear where Pilate conducted this questioning during this time. There are two contenders, two possible locations for this to have occurred, and I moved from the map too soon, or from the PowerPoint too soon. There are two possibilities. I know that's hard to see, but two possibilities are, so he goes from, this is the location of the high priest's residence, and there's two possible locations that people have said for where he could have been, where he could have been taken. And one of those locations is to Herod's palace here. We see right here. Another one is to the Antonia Fortress up here, adjacent to the temple. Adjacent to the temple. And that's hard to see, I know, but here's another something that might be a little easier for you to see. Where Jesus was taken. Taken from the high priest's residence to either Herod's palace or to the Antonia Fortress. And the Antonia Fortress is where things were normally held. Things of this nature were normally held in the Antonia Fortress. But of course, when is this a normal procedure? None of the things that were going on here had normally occurred. So why would this be a normal procedure? The traditional location is Herod's palace, which is right across from the Praetorium. And you can see the Praetorium is right above Herod's palace there. And of course he's taken to the Praetorium later on. And we'll read about when that happens as well. In verse 16, he's taken to the Praetorium. And so we'll talk more about that when we get there. And of course this is in between that and the high priest's residence. So it's a logical place for Pilate to have questioned Jesus here in Herod's palace. And so we see the Antonia Fortress. Here's a close-up of that, where adjacent to the temple, you can see the temple complex on the bottom left there. And so you also see the other possible location, Herod's palace. The thing in the bottom right, if you will, that's Herod's palace, and in the upper left, that is the Praetorium. So there's that big courtyard in the middle there. And so either one, well, the Herod's palace is a possible location for where he was, and later taken to the Praetorium and that courtyard. All right, so we are out of time, certainly. So I do want to for the class anyway. So next time we're going to talk about who Pilate was, who is Pilate, and we'll talk about a few other things as well. Who is Pilate? The questioning before Pilate, and Jesus or Barabbas, which is the next big thing here, and then the cry that the people give here to crucify him, to crucify him. So, I just wanted to give some background on Pilate here, and and on the locations and the time, things of that nature, to get us in that frame of mind to recognize this is early in the morning. He was just denied, and Peter, and he's being taken to Pilate. All right. Any final thoughts or things to mention, Sam, before we close out the live stream?
Just that you think about Jesus, you know, he was on Gethsemane and struggling with this, and he makes up his mind. He's resolute. And then it all starts unfolding just like he knew it would. And he's going through all this. You know, so even though it's happening overnight, it's happening over a 6 to 9 hour period as we're watching this before the crucifixion. You know, Jesus is going through all this. He's hearing all the people. He's seeing all the faces. He knows what's in men's hearts. You know, he can see all of that, and he knows what's coming. And just to think about what he's going through during this time. But you know, this is the most passionate part of the Gospels that we're in the middle of. So you know, it's good to take time to study it.
All right. Yeah, that's definitely true. All right. thank you for all your thoughts and comments, for Dan for your comment there, and for Sam for your comments. Thank you so much for the contributions. And we'll end this live stream now. We'll start our worship live stream in just a moment. So please stick with us as we do that. And we'll see you in a little bit. All right. I hope you got something out of the class, and we'll see us in a second. All right. God bless you.